The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Right, we're back again this week. Shane Stapleton here with Bernard Flynn, Alan Cawley and Declan Maron. How are you doing, lads?
Good. Hey, Shane.
First thing I wanted to touch on, Alan, having watched plenty of football recently, I was just thinking, did you ever look out at some fans in the middle of playing a football match and see them going absolutely nuts, firing abuse, and thinking, why are these guys living vicariously through me and what the hell is going on in their heads?
It's almost a release for some of these fans, isn't it? Like, and a lot of them, you'd almost think, I suppose if you were to see them in their day-to-day lives, a lot of them professional people, good jobs, 9 to 5, and they feel as though they can walk into a ground and because they've paid their money, they just can abuse people. I don't mind a bit of banter, a bit of slagging, that's fine. And in fairness, over the course of the League of Ireland years, generally that's what it was. But I do remember this one time, this one fella in Sligo giving me dogs abuse, my hometown. And normally the fans were grand, but there was this one fella, and of course, as you say, I looked out into the crowd, caught him, and there he was, mid-sentence, giving me a big kind of tongue-lashing, and he just stopped and just sat back down in his chair, and I just stood staring at him for two or three, and I knew who he was. So yeah, I just don't understand it, why people kind of, but I think they almost feel the need. And whatever about, as I say, a bit of banter, slagging, I don't mind that, but some of the abuse people, like, they really go over the top with certain players and people.
Does it get in on players? Like, did you care about that kind of thing?
Not really. Like, as I say, the banter, the slagging thing, you don't mind, and you kind of, in some ways, it riles you and you want to kind of shut them up then.
Yeah.
And it should work two ways. They almost feel then, when you see a fella putting his finger up to his lip, that he's not allowed to do that, yet you're allowed to abuse him from a height, like, you know? So I think it should work both ways. Once it doesn't overstep the mark, but I suppose in a lot of cases when you see the likes of the racism stuff and stuff like that, it can overstep the mark, and I think that's when it's wrong.
Yeah, that's nasty. Bernard, you would have upset the Hill plenty of times as a Meath player. Did it ever actually annoy you, the abuse you would have got, and what sort of abuse would you have gotten?
No, it didn't annoy me, but they would have been, as GA supporters go, listen, the Dubs are actually brilliant, but during that 60, 70 minutes or 80 minutes, the Hill, the boys in the Hill is as good and as rough and as tough as you'll get it. But I'd have to say it's a little bit removed from what the soccer fraternity do dish out to players. Mm. And if you take Matt at the Hill at his worst, and they were bad at times, you take out a screenshot of some of the soccer supporters, and I'm not, and I mean it, it's pretty vicious. I wouldn't say the Hill was vicious. Yes, they would call you names and times. And
what'd they call you?
I can't remember. It wasn't too nice anyway.
Short arse.
tight arse. Tight arse. And the tugs shoved up into you. And, I used to drive me on, I have to say. They used to give, the likes of Mick Lyons and Harnan, fellas that were dishing out the fairly physical stuff for Colm Coyle, they used to give them a lot more.
What's it like playing in front of that burn, that Hill in particular? Well, shooting into that end.
I never played in the new Croke Park, you know, I would have loved to, but the old one, full, was amazing. It, just when it was full, was, or Dublin, the four in a row games, or the Leinster finals, or league final, we played against them a lot of times. Big games, full, but the Dubs was amazing. And the one thing, you know, they were great. When they were losing, they were still the same. Yeah. They still got behind the team. You see it now, just the Gala match, to see the Hill with about 10,000 people in Croke Park. I know it was 30, 35 last weekend, but I think Croke Park with the Dubs, it has to be full to get the best out of them. But they did give stick, but they're not on the same planet as soccer supporters.
There was one there in particular, the Curry match. It was two or three years ago, the semi-final. It was one of the best games of football.
Brilliant game.
2013, I'd say.
Superb.
Often hear and I was at that, and it was a brilliant game from both teams. But you often hear how the Hill, it's the 16th man, and it sucks the ball in, and these kind of cliched phrases you hear. But genuinely that day, they went on a run of about 5 or 6 points, and the Hill was erupting, and it was almost like it was doing that. And that was the first time I kind of experienced that. And it is quite, I know people are suggesting, and there's a lot of debate at the moment over the Super 8s in that game, and people are right that they should have to go outside and play a game. But the when it's full like that, and Dubs behind the goals on Hill 16, it is some sight, in fairness.
It's glorious. The reason I bring it up is because there's a couple of big derbies on this week. Tottenham, Arsenal, Everton, Liverpool, even Mayo Galway, which I'm sure is far more
Sligo team. Finn Harps.
Sligo Finn Harps, the big one as well.
I might be going to that, actually. Yeah.
What's the most poisonous atmosphere you've ever seen? Because it's not going to be nice between Spurs, Arsenal, Everton, Liverpool.
Top of my head,
Most poisonous atmosphere. I remember Keith Fahey going back to St. Pat's after he moved from Shamrock Rovers, and I happened to be sitting amongst some of the Pats fans that day, and that was pretty toxic.
Is Leighton Ireland poisonous?
Not poisonous, no, but I remember the chants and the reaction every time Keith Fahey got the ball. That was pretty poisonous. But I off the top of my head, watching
Celtic
from TV,
Rangers has to be the ultimate.
Well, in England, as Bernard said, they're quite the vitriol with some of them fellas.
It's vicious. Serious stuff.
We'll start with Spurs Arsenal. So you're a big Spurs man, Alan. You haven't shut up about them for God knows how long. But as always, when there's a sniff of winning the title, their togs become heavily laden and quite smelly.
Was there a sniff of winning it? In my opinion, there probably was. People were writing them off weeks ago. But yeah, they have faltered the last couple of games, all right, Shane, to be fair. Particularly Burnley on Saturday, they were poor enough. But it's kind of culminated as well with the injuries, and everybody was suggesting that it might come back to catch them out.
But now that they've came back, they're losing.
Yeah, it's ironic. Like the two games that he's been back, they've lost. But up to that, there probably was a little pattern where they were just eking out wins. There was a couple of last minute ones. Yeah. And
the Newcastle
they were just
scraping by. So lucky.
Yeah, Watford, I think Llorente got a header. They were just scraping by for three or four weeks. But I don't think that culture is still there, to be honest. I think Pochettino has brought a slightly different mindset, and I wouldn't label them as bottlers, as people are quick to suggest now, but they do need maybe one or two to challenge and to win a league. But they're very close.
Because we hammer Arsenal regularly over there.
But they are soft.
They are just 4 points behind Spurs now.
Yeah, but that manager's done quite well this year, Emery.
Yeah, to be fair, this is something we were saying last week. You were kind of giving Arsenal loads of stick, and I was saying, look, they need to completely toss out that squad.
They're a bit
rebuild.
Pointless at the moment.
Yeah, but he's doing quite well with a very limited squad of
scored well
of multi-millionaires.
Yeah, but they don't fit into
million
that
each.
Team. They're not. You know yourself, they're not good enough to really. A lot of them aren't good enough to be there.
Yeah, even though I was looking at United's back four against Crystal Palace, a lot of quite unheralded names, Dalot right back. Mm. Centre back, Lindelof, Fred.
Lindelof's been good lately.
He has been good, but like he's not like a Virgil van Dijk 60 million type defender.
No, but if he's 40 million, he was
30, 40.
I thought he was 32.
Yeah,
but like
that.
He's, you know, I mean, he was on the rubbish heap for a long time.
Euros, yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't say the rubbish heap. That's harsh.
Mourinho had him on the rubbish heap for a while.
Like, yeah, but in fairness to him, I wouldn't, like, I know things have been bad, but he wasn't the worst. There's a lot worse than him there.
But what I'm saying is, are they that much better than what Arsenal have in their ranks? That's the point I'm making.
Yeah, he is.
There.
The rest of them may not, but he's better than Mustafi and
World Cup winner Mustafi.
That Greek fella at the back, rubbish. I can't think of his name, is not too bad, to be fair.
Yeah, he's okay. He's
right.
Like that's why I think Emery has done a decent job, because he inherited pretty poor bunch there. Attacking wise, they were fine, but they were always pretty poor. And it's going to take him time. And as you say, Shane, he's first year, 3 points off third, is it, or fourth?
Four points off.
Yeah. So if he was to get into the Champions League and build from there, that's a good return in his first year.
It's a rather weird derby to be heading into with both of them. I mean, Arsenal are in form, to be fair. They've had a couple of wins, but you still feel that Spurs are stronger. And I noticed this morning they were shortened and they've drifted already. 21-20 about Spurs, so they've just the shades of odds against. 13-5 about the draw, 23-10 about Arsenal. Looking at this game, even earlier in the season, I know Arsenal beat them earlier in the season 4-2, if I remember correctly, but Spurs, to me, have to win this game, even with their poor run. I can't see them losing three games on the bounce.
Yeah, Arsenal have won four of the last five, Alan.
Arsenal have. Mm. Yeah, they're on a good run. I repeat myself, I think Emery's done quite well. He gets to the summer now, and if they were to get into Champions League, there's a battle on there. If they were to get into top four, obviously that entitles him to maybe a better standard of player fellas come to play in the Champions League. And if he strengthens, then who knows? But I think, to be fair to him, because of what he inherited, I think he's done okay.
Is he a guy you could honestly say looks like to be in a long-term Arsenal manager? I don't think so.
I think that might be a bit harsh.
Three Europa Leagues with
Sevilla. But he's a good manager.
I think if he'd have taken another job off the back of that Sevilla job that wasn't the basket case PSG job, we might be talking differently. But
what I like about him as well, like, Ozil was running things there on ridiculous money. He's come in, he wasn't afraid to drop him. Wenger used to be just kind of plumbosing these fellas. He's come in, he's rattled a few cages, he's ruffled a few feathers, which is good to see. And he doesn't let them, he has a standard. They have to meet that. If they don't, they don't play, which I like. I think he's okay, Bernard.
Can I point out something? Actually, we talked the last couple of weeks with Spurs, their record of no draws. I think it was Johnny at the time kind of going, they're going for it very much with the, you know, no point in getting a draw, going for the win.
Yeah.
But you look at their loss column in the league, they've got 8 losses. That's the most in the top 6. It's close enough to what Wolves are on.
Yeah.
It's just not really good enough to be a top, certainly not a top 2 team. I wouldn't have even thought a top 3 team. So you would have to think there's going to be a couple of draws coming their way at some stage. They're going to have to settle down, and otherwise they're going to possibly drop out behind Chelsea and even Arsenal.
What price a draw?
Draw 13-5. So right. Bit short. I still think Spurs win this for me, just because I don't really fancy Arsenal winning the big games this season. But interesting though that approach for Spurs. They've had a lot of draws maybe last season. They've maybe kicked on a bit this season and gone all out to either win or lose a game, and it's not worked either.
Mm. Ostensibly a home game for Spurs in Wembley. Does that make a difference?
Well, not with they'll be out. Obviously, you'll be expecting a reaction from them from the last 2 games, so they'll be out to try their best to win the game. Obviously, tricky game though, going into it with 2 defeats and Arsenal in good form, as you says, 4 out of 5. It's a tough one to call. Like a few weeks ago, you would have had Spurs definitely down as not bankers, but as firm favourites. But it's probably a tough one to call now.
Who would you have up front here? Like Son, Kane, and would you have Moura in there? He came off the bench against Chelsea.
Yeah, I saw him off the bench last night. He's a bit hit and miss, Moura. And like
he's drifted a bit. He started off really well, didn't he?
And I think he's that type of player. I don't think he's that consistent or reliable. He'd play Kane and Son. And just because he scored Saturday, Kane. Just because they haven't won, you don't need to be changing everything.
Yeah,
even
money.
You're hard on Spurs.
You've got Harry Kane 130 to get the first goal, or even money anytime. I like that even money anytime. I think that's a great bet because he's always going to be dangerous. But 130, if he scores inside 20 minutes, our double odds offer will come into effect again. So
draw looks like, I think a draw 13-5 could be a good bet here. Yeah.
Aubameyang maybe for a goal as well.
What's Aubameyang?
Aubameyang in there at 9-2, so a little bit bigger.
That's for first goal scorer. Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. Move on to Everton and Liverpool. So Liverpool beat Watford 5-0. So maybe that's finally a suggestion that they're calming down, that the nerves are going to end somewhat, whereas City had could you call it a nervy 1-0 win over West Ham?
I heard they battered them. But still, it's only 1-0.
Yeah.
The penalty.
I didn't see the game. I saw
the highlights, and they were commenting a lot on the highlights about how uneasy it felt in the stadium, which is weird. You'd associate that with Liverpool a lot this year, but not City really at any point. I think Man City get a lot of criticism, to be fair, from people about their fans and their stadium, in terms of certainly for Champions League stuff, booing the Champions League anthem or not creating as much of an atmosphere. But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't sound like it was the best atmosphere there during the night. I haven't, no.
There is no atmosphere.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, people just turn up and expect.
That if the fans weren't that loud or a bit nervy, maybe would start to get on the players' backs?
Like it's the weirdest place I've been, because you go to football grounds and there's all, and we spoke about Croke Park, there's all the history and heritage of a ground all over the years. No matter where you go, I was in Daly on Monday night, and you think back of all the years, different things in the football match that have been played there. I went to the Etihad last year against Chelsea. Brand new stadium, brand new spanker, beautiful stadium. But out in the middle of nowhere, right, it is. You get the train out, it's on a university campus. But when you're walking up to the ground, there's no feel whatsoever for anything that has gone on before. It's literally like that, as if it's a brand new club that was only built 4 or 5 years ago when the money came in and they started winning things. There's no pictures of old players or old relics or statues or anything.
No Sean Gutter, no Paul Dickard.
There's not even a mention of them. Like Mike Summerby, all these fellas, Niall Quinn.
Is that billboard of Tevez still up anywhere? They can throw that up along it.
I honestly came out of the ground thinking to myself, this is bizarre. Like it's like as if they only remember the last
Ace
5 or 6 years.
Ace of Hartford.
But the likes of them fellas, I would love to know what the likes of those old players going to that ground feel. Because it's literally like all that is just forgotten about. Mm. And here you are now with a club that have just pumped in the money, and we've just started from 2010 or whatever it was when the money came. It's bonkers.
Problem is they have Pep.
Yeah,
that's the only problem.
Philosopher. But in terms of atmosphere and all, like, it's.
Can I ask, just getting back to the Everton Liverpool game, how do you feel Marco Silva's
tenure's
looking up?
Yeah, that's those eyes. Did you see what happened to Dave Jones when he looked at Graeme Souness with those eyes? So if I was you,
did you
guy,
see?
Did you see
that the other night? That
brilliant.
Oh, it was class.
Souness.
You're talking about a fella did a little lump in his trousers, your man.
Oh, he was gone.
Honest to God.
He's what's the look all about?
Yeah. I played it back.
He
got him and nailed him, because he was obviously being a bit sneery or whatever it was. You know,
almost looking at the boys and what is this fella on?
As pundits, have you ever felt like doing that to a presenter when you've been live on air?
I did. I got sacked one time. I said a few things I shouldn't have said, but anyway.
What did you say? Come on. We're not going to fire you from this.
I remember saying,
can we fire him?
No, I've been. I remember saying one time about this got me in big trouble in RTE. It was, do you remember the cornerback, I won't mention his name, the Dublin player that bit the Donegal player up in Donegal in the league match?
Yes.
Suarez.
Hang on. Anyway, do you remember that?
I do.
Anyway, I came up, I just said...
Allegedly.
Allegedly. That did allegedly. It did happen, but allegedly. Mm. And I just said, listen, if that was back in the day, I said he'd be on his knees looking for his teeth in the grass, and for the next 6 weeks, he'd be sucking his food through a straw.
Oh, I think I remember this.
And that got you in serious trouble.
But he'd have suspended. So, anyway, listen. But as regards to presenter...
Do you regret the comments?
I don't regret... I actually meant what I said, but it probably was the wrong place for it, if you like, in one sense. But
National
it did
radio.
Happen. But biting, imagine biting a fella. And you know, listen, it passed over. The other one was Jamie Clark, where he had gone for about the 10th time away from Armagh. And I actually said, like, I really was strong and hard on him. Now he's back again, but I didn't like the way he's left umpteen times, come back when it suits him and
you
take him back.
You just questioned the commitment, did you?
I did, big time, very strongly and stuff like that. But listen, I thought Souness was brilliant. Brilliant. Absolutely superb. I think Souness has got frustrated over the last... I was going to say something about her stop now.
Be suspended again.
He's learned his lesson.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to say, Alan? I'm going to say no more. I know how he's got to
sell the last
one.
There's a lot of nods and winks here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say nothing. I actually
stopped. 9-2 about Everton. 29-10 about the draw. 6-10 about Liverpool. I don't know what you think of this Everton team.
They won last night.
Yeah, they beat Cardiff 3-0. I think honestly though, just looking at the money spent in this Everton team, and as you go through it, it's a really poor squad.
It's flop after flop.
Yeah, if Richarlison doesn't really do a whole lot for them, they don't really seem to be.
Funny, he was a good buy.
He was, but he's a lot
not
of money.
The money, but he
yeah,
was
and 30 million. Yeah.
I think when you look through
well at Watford,
when you look through the team, they've got a lot of that at the moment. Sigurdsson is their top scorer.
Coleman's form, I think, is suffering in the Everton squad.
But all the way through that squad, they don't have really a lot in firepower. They're very blunt. You've got Tosin, you've got
Calvert-Lewin.
Bernard, you've got Calvert-Lewin, you've got like Walcott coming in. None of them have contributed with goals or anything like that, or assists. But
no, he's under pressure. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him in the summer. Do they back him and stick with him, or
penalties and set pieces from Gylfi Sigurdsson is out of staying alive at the
good
moment.
Player,
you know,
Divock Origi scored the winner in the other fixture earlier in the season.
Oh, yeah.
He started the other night against Watford.
Did all right.
Scored a nice goal. Mm. It was the first time since November 2017 that Firmino didn't start because of an injury. Is Origi the answer if Firmino... Apparently it's not that bad of an injury, but is Origi the answer?
Do you know what the answer is? I reckon Alexander-Arnold's back in the team. They look about 50 times better for it.
A couple of brilliant crosses for goals, didn't he?
It's freed up a bit
Van
of space.
Van Dijk, two goals.
Yeah. Wow. Both set up by Alexander.
Good win.
Is Origi good enough to hold a fort if Firmino's out for a few games?
No.
Brutal.
He's nowhere near Firmino.
Would you still use Sturridge and compromise the way
you're
holding
Sturridge?
No,
he's better than Sturridge.
Yeah.
Well, there's more mobility with him and more legs and energy and all. He'd be alright to fill a gap, but you'd want Firmino back as soon as possible.
Will Origi make a good centre back someday? Like the reverse of Chris Samba. Do you remember he played for Blackburn?
Yeah.
There's a fella, I saw a thing last week, Bamba, that plays with Cardiff.
Bamba.
Four down, was it, against Watford last Friday night, that match. And he's one of the most, there's a lot of ridiculous things happen in football, and it's probably up there with a. But he scored a goal and there were four down, and he ran into the net and did a celebration out to the crowd. And I was like, "What is this idiot doing? Will he just get the ball and get back?"
He's the team captain as well.
I'm sure Warner came out with a ridiculous comment that he'd have him over Van Dijk any day.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
What on earth?
Mind you, we did nearly score a bicycle kick at the start of the season, only for he was offside. So
I'd have sold Campbell now over Sol Bamba.
Now there's a mid fainter.
Yeah. So Macclesfield, isn't that right?
Doing right, have him now at 40 out of this fella, Bernard.
Poor Scholes. I think Scholes is going to have the same as his buddy, Neville.
Oh, I kind of want to see Scholes fail, if I'm honest.
Ah, come on. I'm just Scholesy.
Sick of his shtick. You know the way he dismisses everyone. Wouldn't do interviews throughout his career. Thinks he's
then
a great lad.
And you couldn't shut him up after.
Come here. What about Liverpool, the way they defend free kicks? Didn't Watford have one about 45 yards out? And the whole team...
The high line.
The high line was out. He must have been out nearly 30 yards.
Happened twice or three times in the game, actually.
Is that not madness, Alan?
It is madness.
With Sigurdsson taking them as well now,
The West Ham game, was it right? Should have scored with the head. It is, It's. I think it's a dangerous tactic, but it's something Klopp uses a lot of the time. He'd probably persist with it because that's what you get with a lot of those managers. They're stubborn, but I think Liverpool will beat Everton on Sunday.
Form goes out the window with these derbies.
I think last night was big because not only did they get the result, I think at this stage it's just all about results, but last night they needed a performance because they did have a shaky two or 3 weeks.
Klopp's interviews actually said that.
They needed a performance of the Liverpool that have been there all up to Christmas. So they needed that. Great win. They'll be buzzing into that game. And I've said it all along. I think they'll win the league, and I stuck to me.
City's going to win it. I told you that weeks ago.
Have you ever seen a player as erratic with his performances as Sadio Mane, who was brilliant last night and so terrible against Manchester United? Couldn't pass him.
Out of the three of them, I think he's been the best of them. He probably
also seems to have been the worst in some of the games as well. Yeah, if you get what I mean, he goes.
Sadio got goals. I'm just wondering now that and the run in. He needs to start picking a few goals.
But 9-2.
Shane was tweeting me about Salah last week.
Yeah, because like before, I said to you, he's capable of producing amazing moments. He's got great speed, all this kind of stuff.
I think it wasn't the time of the goal where you missing. Said it was a cross and it went in, and I agree.
That could have been Napoli or someone like that, wasn't it?
Champions League.
But like I said to you, he's capable of producing Milan Baros / Gibril Cissé moments as well. And at the time, you called me a fool. Yeah, you did. And now you see it.
No, I think it was because you compared him to Baros.
Yeah,
that was the foolish part.
But and Gibril Cissé as well.
Oh, that was even more foolish.
But I'm just saying, sometimes he just kicks the ball and hopes for the best.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, I don't know about that.
He's
just been a bit.
But look, you agree with me now. That's fine.
No, the thing I think with Salah, I don't think he's up there anywhere near what people suggest he is. He had a freak season last year, but this fella's been around 7 or 8 years. Mm. And if you look at his numbers before that, he was like 12, 16, 14, 18. Last year was a freak season. He was never going to repeat that. Good player, but he's by no means one of the greats. Mm-hmm. Like, I was looking, like, this is another nonsense, this thing. The combined 11s. Have you seen this?
Well,
this has become a thing now. Liverpool and Man United are coming up, so let's pick a combined 11. Who gives a monkey's like? Mm. So you have them all on Twitter and places.
It's clickbait, though.
Yeah, but it's become a bit of a thing, right? People doing it. So they're all going on with their combined 11s, and they all had. There was another one where they're picking their greatest Liverpool players ever, and they had Salah in it. And I'm saying, he's there 1 year. Will you come on?
So what is your combined 11 all time? No, I couldn't put up with that either. So we're all thinking Liverpool here, are we?
Yeah, there's a few interesting markets just to point out as well. You can get Sigurdsson to score Everton to lose at 17-2, which isn't bad when you consider it's a pretty tough game to get any value on because Liverpool are strong
favourites.
Probably
take a penalty as well.
Yeah, or free kicks.
What's
and stuff.
I
did give the betting out there a minute ago, Bernie. It was 6-10 Liverpool, 29-10 the draw, 9-2 about Everton, I should say. Just to point out as well, Mane, as I said, first goal 9-2, where you can get him 7-5 to score any time. He is again, it's a game where we'll double the odds on your winning first goal score if your player goes on to score inside 20. And just one interesting one for Mane to score in both halves, 16-1. Nice little bet.
We touched on Bournemouth against Man City there already. Bournemouth got absolutely hammered by Arsenal 5-1.
Their away form is chronic.
Yeah, so they're at home for this game. Do you give them any chance?
No.
12-1 in the betting.
12-1.
And I'm mad about Eddie Howe. I think he's a great manager and he'll go on to good things. But
when they get beaten and they get some dustings, don't they?
Well, away from home, Bernard, I think the record is, I think they could have lost the last 7 or 8. It's horrific. Stato Stapleton might have a have
well
a
they've only won one of the last 5-3 losses and a draw, if I remember correctly.
There you go. Man, Stato. When their away form's chronic.
When they play ball against another team who plays ball better than them, it's just that they get overrun, isn't it? They don't defend or stay back in heaps. And
hold on a minute now before you start bashing another manager.
Oh no,
just stop wearing a tracksuit.
10,500 to get at the crowds.
Yeah,
10,500. So the job that he has done there, not only unbelievable.
I don't think anyone would argue with that. I mean, it's incredible. There's a point in his career you can stay too long. He could miss the boat.
He could, yeah.
He could miss it.
Start wearing a suit and you'll get the big jobs like Marco Silva, even though Marco Silva is broken.
Leicester now, would that be a good move for him? Would it have been if...
I was just thinking that, actually. That would have been an interesting move.
I tell you, Rodgers...
Because is he ever going to get the top six?
He has to be the biggest bluffer. Brendan Rodgers.
Okay, come on.
He's a bluffer. He is a bluffer.
Right, sure. We're coming on to them. Watford against
He's
Leicester this weekend.
He's absolutely a bluffer.
Brendan Rodgers... He rightly has
There's
left
no
the treble bit. Why would you waste your time with Celtic anymore? I know they get big crowds, supposedly big, huge club. Leicester, the 14th richest club in the world. So obviously, in terms of finances, Celtic, best of luck with that.
Yeah.
Yerramino comparatively,
his interview
financially.
That was put up was like something out of a concentration camp.
Yeah, but look, he's a cringe. He's cringe.
It was shocking.
Yeah, he's cringe.
Oh, it was cringe material stuff. It was shocking.
Alan, just Mark, this, just, talk
just
to us.
Quick one. Rangers are 7-1 to win the Scottish League.
Will you stop talking 7-1. No one cares about Scottish League. That's the point here.
Last three games, the jurors.
Oh, God, the Scottish League. Please, please, please.
Talk to us. Rodgers.
Yeah.
I agree with everything you said. He had to go. I don't get the outrage and people slaughtering him. And he done amazing things with that club. He delivered and delivered and
Alan,
delivered.
You would have done the same.
Anyone would have done the same.
He would have done the same.
Paul Ince would probably tell us he'd do the same.
Oh,
even Ince would have done the same.
I would have done the same in winning the leagues. I don't know, Bernard, because you probably would win the league, but I think he's brought a lot in terms
Rangers
of style and the football and all that.
Is there anything to be said that he, like, they could have just done a deal at the end of the season?
Well, you see, the argument to that is Leicester are probably saying he goes in now and he's able to kind of assess the squad, see what he needs, so he'll get 3 months of looking at them. Come the transfer window, he's able
to say. Awful in the transfer window, though. They shouldn't be giving him free reign.
But they're going to win the league anyway.
He bought Coutinho for 8.5 million. Yeah, they sold him for 160.
Let's look at all the other players he bought that he then sold for.
Don't you dare bring up Lazar Markovic.
The biggest single risk is Neil Lennon going back into Celtic. That's a risk.
Why is that a risk, though?
I think it's a big risk.
For who? For Lennon?
Well, he was thrown out of Hibernian.
Because he's a loose cannon.
So it's a it's a risk for Celtic.
Oh, it's a big risk.
I thought you were
Celtic.
Saying for Lennon.
No.
I was like, he's nothing
huge
to lose.
Huge risk,
going
I think.
Why?
Huge.
Why?
Because there's only one way they can go. And those soccer players, they all talk. I mean, by all accounts, his...
Was Rodgers right to leave?
100%. Hey.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For him to get another deal, he's
Whopper money. I don't think it's just for money. It's the fact you're back in the Premier League,
of course.
Leicester.
And
all
he's
that.
Doubled. He's doubled or trebled his salary. There's no question.
Oh no, I know that. But
it's another big move.
But for
him.
People suggesting it's
relative.
Just about money, sure, he's a multi-millionaire.
No, but Lennon, let's say what happened. Let's say Lennon, it implodes.
Well, last night we were struggling against 10 men. One all.
See the reaction when they got the goal near the end.
Bananas.
Oh,
Duffer.
Yeah, that photo. Duffer.
It's great for him to get the role there, but I'm not too sure about Lennon going back in there. I'm really not.
What I love about Duffer actually getting this role is he seems so reluctant to be involved in coaching anyway, and it's like he seems naturally good at it. So
he's nuts on the line. I went up to watch him against the under-15s when he was managing the under-15s. He's a looper.
But even in the RT studios,
plenty two of them together.
I love the fact that he just has even in the RT studios, he has a bit of a disinterested look. I love the idea of him sort of reluctantly going up and up the ranks. He's going to end up managing someone and not really want to be there.
But he's not reluctant in going up. He actually wants to go high. Oh, he said it when that Celtic job came, I would have swam across. He's mad to progress in coaching.
Didn't he say he didn't want to be dealing with players these days and, you know... He was already giving out about kids.
This
these
is unbelievable
days
for him. He will. He could have possibly managed him one day. Like,
do you think, has he the personality to do it? Because what we see is a little bit dour on when he's doing punditry.
He's not box office compared to what we're used to Dunphy and all that. But
I know his stuff. Yeah, and he is very ambitious. I know that from speaking to lads when he's the Shamrock Rovers. Like, he's very very committed and he's very determined. He wants to achieve. He's a great Duff is one of my heroes.
Any idea what his philosophy is?
I think he wants to play, yeah.
Train from morning tonight, but it sounds
very good.
Yeah.
The day I watched him.
So Leicester to win at Watford after Watford getting hammered by Liverpool.
19-10 for Leicester, 11-5 the draw, 29-20 for Watford. You'd have to think so, wouldn't you? They have to look a little bit vulnerable now, Watford, after a terrible performance. Mind you, they get battered each season at Anfield. They've always been pretty, because I think it's been
very streaky team. They could bounce back and win. They could do anything.
Yeah.
Leicester. Yeah, I just wonder with Leicester. They have a fairly high turnover of managers. Like, Brendan, this could be his last chance for a decent Premier League job.
He's a better calibre manager. To be fair to Puel, you know what killed Puel, I thought, was the defeat to Newport County.
Yeah.
Leicester are never going to win the league again, right? So if you go in there, plus they're probably not going to be relegated. And as you said, they're the 14th richest. I think they're spending 100 million on a new training complex.
Yeah.
Like, there's whopper money there. They have a decent squad, a decent team, a team that probably should be 7th, 8th, are arguably fighting for the best of the rest. So to have them 12th, he's underachieved there. But what killed him and just brought so much pressure on top of him, and he didn't need it, was that Newport County, because he should be thinking, okay, I'll be challenging for maybe between 6th and 9th. If I get in there, that's probably okay. But go for the two cups. Why do they not go for the cups?
It sounded like he just fell out with the players as well. It sounded like the players were sick of him towards
the
end of the job.
I don't respect any of them. The likes of Vardy, they're calling the shots, a couple of them, and they've got two managers to sack now. Mm. They won't do it to Rodgers. He has a bit more about him, and he won't let them away with that.
Watford, after being so poor at the back, you wonder from set pieces, are they going to be vulnerable here again? They've got some good deliverers, do Leicester. And Harry Maguire, 20-1 to get the first goal, something like that could be interesting, just after seeing Van Dijk stick to
they've
it.
They've a good squad, Leicester, like Vardy, Madison, Chilwell, Demarai Gray, Tielemans to just sign, Maguire at the back, Kasper Schmeichel. They've a good squad, and if he adds two or three to that, he could do well.
We'll go for one final Premier League game then. Man United at home to Southampton. Lukaku got a couple of nice goals there during the week at Crystal Palace as well. That's very important for him because they're missing Lingard and Rashford. And it's very important that he stepped up because even, you know, Alexis Sanchez is there. Seems like he's a busted flush. He lost Joel Ward. He fell asleep for Joel Ward's goal as well. So, we've talked ad nauseum, I suppose, about Lukaku and whether he slows up play and that's why Rashford needs to play on his own up front. But is this the sort of performance that shows he's a viable option to start when everyone's there?
Shows the kind of performance that'll increase his sell-on value when they flog him in the summer, I'd say.
Right, so you don't see anything...
I like that.
Yeah.
Straight in.
So you don't see him being a viable option to be
not,
the
not if they're sticking with Solskjaer and playing this style.
I agree.
I can imagine
Solskjaer won't keep him.
I'm playing Sunday. He's a lump. Yeah.
I'm playing devil's advocate here, to be honest. I don't think so either.
No, and if they're all fit, he doesn't play. So, yeah. And we've seen that already.
Luke Shaw.
Good player. Brilliant on Sunday.
Really, really good. Yeah, really, really good run against up the left side to set up Lukaku's first goal. Committed three or four players as well.
I always rated Shaw. It was just your man was hammering him every week, Mourinho, publicly and behind the scenes. You don't need that. Like, whatever about a bit of criticism is grand, but this fella was hammering him.
He had got a bit fat, though, in fairness to him.
Had
he had a bit. He did lose the weight afterwards.
A lot of people say that. But
I think his build, to be fair to him, there was a period where he was
stone, he's a stone lighter now than he was.
The standout one was when he had a really good game. I can't remember who was against him. Mourinho said that he was controlling them and telling him what to do. It's like he can't do anything at that stage. He was playing well.
Terrible, but your man got his act together, in fairness, as well.
Yeah, but he had two horrendous injuries as well. Yeah, so to see him fighting back, I like the kid. He has a bit of character about.
Yeah, it was talk that he could have lost his leg that time.
It was horrendous that time, and then it happened him again.
And they're like United at home to Southampton, who were just after climbing out of the relegation zone with a 2-0 win.
Some job Solskjaer has done. It's unbelievable.
What about the job Hasenhüttl has done?
Yeah, he's done. It should be said as well.
But Hughes
to be fair.
The appointment of Hughes.
Oh, it's nonsense.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And they had such a bad start. So to be fair to Hasenhüttl, he's done quite well.
I like him. Listening to him. He's actually quite good and positive.
Yeah,
he is.
Yeah, he's done well.
And the young lad has got injured there in Southampton. He was actually. It was interesting the manager speaking the other morning about it when he says he's getting too many injuries for a young lad.
Oh really?
Yeah, he said that. He said he's got a. It's a big one for him. Like he's got to try and sort it some way.
Anyone make a case for Southampton to win this game?
Not particularly, no.
Traditionally, they've always caused United trouble at Old Trafford, but 1-2, is it?
1-2 for Man United, and 11-2.
Throw
it
in a double, guaranteed.
United minus one.
Sunday's result was great against Liverpool, considering all that went on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they did. They were sort of done early on. I wonder sometimes in a game like this for Man United, they're so used to their counter attacking is their best kind of game. If Fulham just sit back and keep it stale, is there any chance that Southampton can get a draw? You can get Southampton or draw at 31-20, so sort of double result type situation there if you fancy it, but I'd have to think United are the stronger team. As you said, maybe minus one would be the way to go on the handicap.
Quick look at the League of Ireland and a couple of games that are interesting here. You can't go past Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk anyway, lads. We'll start there.
Potentially first versus potentially second, although both of them mid-table at the moment.
I think it's 8 versus 9.
8 versus 9. Beautiful. 9-4 Shamrock Rovers, 2-1 the draw, and 23-20 about Dundalk. What's going on at Dundalk at the moment, Alan?
Good question, Dick. It's obviously been a slow start, but they had a slow start under Stephen Kenny last year, but it's obviously more kind of eye-catching at the moment with the new management structure or team in place. So it's been, I thought they'd beat UCD comfortably now the other night because I watched UCD against Bohemians and they're very naive. And Collie, it's kind of admirable the philosophy that he adopts and wants to play, but that's okay in the first division and winning it, but you get punished at this level playing very open and expansively. And I felt them going up to Dundalk, taking them on in a game of ball the way they were going to. I thought Dundalk would expose them, but that wasn't the case. They were 1-0 up at half time. Fairness, Dundalk fought back and it was badly needed win. Like, it was only 2-1 in the end. But I just look at all the other teams who were supposedly going to win the league or challenge them, and we were the ones who were, obviously I mentioned Shamrock Rovers, Cork, Pats, they were the three that were being bandied about. But if you look at the league table, after Dundalk's such a slow start and uninspiring, they should have 8 points on them.
You're right,
or nine
yeah.
points. They should have built up a lead at this point. I think it's only two or three if you look at them all.
It is.
Pat slipped up the other night. Cork only got their first win. Well, Shamrock Rovers got beat by Bohemians again.
Is that something to be said for Shamrock Rovers now? Because no matter what way you look at their last few seasons, it's the same results they're getting. It's the same problems as well. Mm. This kind of talk of, you know, outplaying or and to be fair, look at the red card, you could probably sympathise. There was a lot of debate on whether it was.
I thought it was a red.
Did you? Yeah. I don't know. I haven't watched it back a couple of times. I can see why you'd give it. But I think looking at Rovers, it's the same problems again. Again, they play nice ball, but they go through these patches in games where they just, it's not exactly fall asleep, but they kind of turn onto autopilot and they just don't break teams down.
I think
and then the game gets away from them.
It's a huge game this, Shane, because for those reasons we mentioned with Dundalk having a slow start, they have to win again tomorrow night. Like, it's almost got to the stage now where they need to win badly. And Shamrock Rovers being one of their main contenders as such, he's under pressure already if he doesn't win, because that'll be only two wins out of four.
And like for Vinnie Pert, is the team playing any differently under him that you've seen in these early stages of the season?
Well, I only watched him against Sligo Rovers the first game of the season, and there was no difference whatsoever. Because it's essentially the same group of players.
Yeah.
Now, I have heard a couple of the training sessions are a little bit different while we were up there. Now, I don't know how much of an influence that can have, or he just shaking things up.
In what way did you hear?
Just that they were doing a little bit more kind of specific work on certain things, where Stephen, I think, used to do a lot of just come in and the session would be kind of just whatever, off the cuff type thing, and away we go and do the session. Whereas I think this is a lot of pre-planning goes into the sessions, which I'd have no problem with either, and they work on a lot of specific areas. It's just the one thing that stands out, like everything else, Shane, with football, it's results. And no matter what you're doing, rightly or wrongly, as soon as you get a couple of bad results, people straight away
start looking. Can I just ask a question, lads? You know more than me in it. Is it in the Premier League, in the League of Ireland, let's say, is it a case that full-time professionals are playing against part-time professionals?
Only in UCD, two cases, UCD and Bose.
When you think of it, there are some teams who are fully full, and there are some teams in the same league who aren't.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually quite incredible, isn't it? When you think about it.
But credit has to be given, because Bose are sitting at the top of the table at the moment.
The part-time team are part-time. Top of the table. Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
And he is probably one of the lowest budgets. This job that Keith Long is doing is unbelievable.
Ah, class.
Isn't that incredible? Like, when you're talking, you know, it's an interesting one.
And last year his squad was dismantled, Bernard. I watched him at the end of the season against Dundalk. They were brilliant. They beat Dundalk 2-1. And I'm coming out of the ground. It was the last game of the season, but it didn't have an end of season feel to it at all. Two teams were going hammer and tongs. I came out thinking, these have the makings of a really good side here. And if he holds all these together, adds one or two, they could do well. 2 weeks later, he lost his goalkeeper, three centre-halves, centre midfielder, and there was one other. So he lost about five or six first-team players, and I'm saying, oh, good luck, he has to start from scratch all over again. He's gone out, he's got another five or six in, and these lads arguably are nearly better than the other five that he let go. Like, his recruitment is unbelievable.
It's top class.
And here they are now, three games in, they've played Finn Harps, they've played Shamrock Rovers the other night, and UCD, and they're sitting top of the table on limited resources, part-time lads, working away. Incredible job.
And people were talking up about Bowes going down again, which I didn't agree with, even though they'd been decimated. But but just on this game then, for some of the betting, I think score draw might not be a bad option at 17-5. I was looking as well at the, because it's going to be tight, and neither team are fully firing by the looks of it at the moment early in the season. You've also got some interesting markets on the either team to win from behind. So Rovers to win from behind at 20-1, or Dundalk to win from behind at 14-1 for me is the bet of the game.
I'd fancy Dundalk, because I think at some point they're going to have to click, and big game tomorrow night could bring out the best in them, because that's a huge game. Shamrock Rovers as well opened up a new stand last week. The attendance, you should give a mention to Shane, they've been incredible. The first 3 weeks of the season have been absolutely brilliant. So well supported. Hopefully people can sustain that and maintain it, the clubs, because it makes such a difference when the ground is packed as well.
Two very quick questions for you just before we move on from the football then. Cork at odds on versus Derry, would you have any of that?
No.
And also Finn Harps versus Sligo, relegation battle,
yeah,
like right
I
from the start of the season.
I said at the start of the season I'd worry for Sligo Rovers. Their recruitment has been a bit of a mishmash. Here we are now, and they're short numbers. I also said they've had four or five injuries, they're struggling for numbers, I think, going into the game Friday. Finn Harps have fight and battle and kick all night long. Tough night ahead for Sligo Rovers.
Ollie Horgan's a very, very clever lad as well. He'll
and they've got a great result against St. Pat's the other
definitely
night.
29-20 for Harps, 9-5 for Sligo, and 19-10 about the draw.
Speaking of Pat's, there's a stat that stood out for me. After three games, they're 7 points, just two goals scored. So a couple of 1-0 wins.
Brilliant.
And a nil all. So yeah, keeping it very tight as well. doing well.
They haven't conceded a goal, I think, have they?
No, that's the point. They've scored two goals already.
That's what Pats needed, because under Liam, I always felt they were, because Liam likes to play this kind of open brand of football, which is all good and well when you have good players to do it and you're dominating the ball and beating teams. But in the last couple of years, when he didn't have those players, they were so easy to play against, and that's why they were so inconsistent and losing every and conceding so many goals. Whereas the Harry, on top of his good recruitment, he also had to strengthen that side of it and kind of make them a bit more resilient and a bit more stronger at the back, which, as you rightly say there, Shane, three clean sheets, he's obviously done that.
So that's great stuff on the football. Let's have a quick look at the golf. It's starting to get into an interesting part of the season. The Arnold Palmer's coming up, the Players' Championship's coming up. We all hate Rory McIlroy again because he's not going to the Irish Open.
I have to say, I think Gary Murphy from this parish, or from the Mayor's Parish usually, wrote a piece on that, and I agree with him. I thought it was very harsh, this sort of like anger towards McIlroy for not turning up for an Irish Open tournament. He's... You know what I mean? It's not.
Come on, Rory. You've enough money. Will you play at home?
Yeah, but
make sure it's a big tournament.
Never
mind big names.
Never mind the money. He wants to kick on this year, and he goes, right, here's how my prep is going. I'm doing this, this, this. He's not going to do the Irish Open.
He doesn't know anyone, anything.
Come on. I'd have to say he has genuinely done huge work. I've been critical maybe with his caddy, different things like that, or his putting. What Rory McIlroy has done for the Irish Open, genuinely, Shane, over the last number of years, he's put up on.
But why let it slip?
I think he's had a massive crossroads in his career. I really do. Yeah. I don't think he's going to get another few years like the last few. I really mean that. I don't think he's going to win a major in 5 or 6 years' time if he doesn't do something shortly. I think the next couple of years are crucial.
Kick the teeth for Paul McGinley.
Just
is it?
No, it's not really.
Of course it is. Sure, like, he wants to make sure it's a brilliant Irish Open, and if you don't have the biggest name in Irish golf there, obviously that's going to affect the attendance.
He single-handedly dragged it from nothing.
It was on his knees.
Why stop now?
No, because he's thinking of himself. I actually agree with him. I agree with him.
Is it not fair enough for me to say, okay, you're being selfish, well then I'm going to have a pop at it?
Yeah, no, I respect that. I genuinely do.
But you can understand where he's coming from.
I actually do understand where he's coming from.
Yeah. Three against one here. Yeah.
Shane, I think that's been a little bit foolish.
It's been a little bit foolish.
Why does he divide opinion so much as well? I don't get that with McIlroy. People either hate him or love him. There's no in between.
Because jealousy is massive. Right. It is massive.
Back in the day of the Olympics and the golf, he gave us this Zika nonsense. Right, it's that sort of stuff.
Don't disagree with you on that, Shane. Yeah. I don't this is a little bit different. Yeah. I think if you sit down and analyse what he's done with the Irish Open, his career now where it is, he has got to sort himself out with the majors.
And as you said before we came on, Bernard, when we were talking about the golf, he's had a good start today, the last couple of tournaments.
I see something a little bit different about him now, I have to say.
Let me tell you, I was reading the piece on this earlier. I actually really think now's the time, back him for the Arnold Palmer if he's involved in that, because I was reading the piece earlier. Basically, he's leading on strokes gained in the opening few tournaments this year. He's ahead of just Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele. Basically, that's a stat that gives you sort of a lot of detail where he's picking up strokes from. It's relatively bizarre, according to this piece, that he's not won tournament yet with these stats. So basically he's doing everything, it's just that these lads are basically upping their game. Someone's having a standout game, a standout couple of holes and beating them. So he's on the precipice essentially of getting a win. He'll probably be around 10-1 for the Arnold Palmer Invitational if he's involved there. And that's just a guess because we haven't got that price.
I think the majors this year will be phenomenal, lads, to watch. It'll be incredible.
Do you know what? We're not far away. You've got the Players' Championship coming up the following week.
Well, that's the fifth major, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
pretty much. Yeah, it's an absolute cracker. Just wanted to touch on that really briefly as well, because that's a TBC Sawgrass, and we talked about that with Gary, I think, last year, if I remember. Really narrow course. Driving accuracy is going to be important. So McIlroy could be in with a chance in that again. But you've got the likes of Henrik Stenson, who'll be up about 50-1 or so. He was, I think, number one last year for driving accuracy. And Ryan Moore should also be a decent each way option. You get him up in the high hundreds, I'd say. So two each way early plays for the Players' Championship, but all over Rory for the Arnold Palmer.
Let's move on to the race, and then we're coming closer and closer to Cheltenham all the time.
Yeah, we'll do it
2 weeks.
Pretty much. Well, our preview will be next week. That's one for the diaries.
10 days, is it? 12 days.
Yeah, pretty much.
Are you getting excited now?
The goat.
I can see you, Declan. You're getting excited.
I am. I'm really looking forward to it now. I'll be off the week before, so I won't be here next week. Someone else filling in, doing some of the Cheltenham talk, but I'll be sitting in the sun, scheming somewhere for basically planning my week of betting. It's going to be a cracker. We're non-runner, no bet now on all races at Ladbrokes, so get on with any of the selections now, and basically you'll get your money back if it doesn't run. Noticed as well a record 825 Irish horses entered. That counts for 45% of all entrants over there. So we're going over to what was it McGregor used to say, to take over, not just take part, all that, all that crack. Penn Hill's not one of them, though. He
quoting
misses
that out. Lad.
It's clickbait, as you said. It's people listening. He misses out, Penn Hill, so revised betting for that. We will just have that in a moment. It's going to be an interesting little race, that. Now you've got Paisley Park top of the betting 7-4, then you've got some names, Faheen Sam Crow and Super Sunday, all in there at 5-1 and about 11s or bigger. So the revised betting is very interesting. Paisley Park has sort of gone very, very short, that, not really sure what he's beaten. He was really impressive in the Cleeve. We talked to Johnny a little bit about Sam Crow. He could well go. I think they're sort of leaning towards he's not going to go now, off the back of that lung infection. A lot of buzz about Faheen. He's shortened up. He's, as I said, 5-1. 5-1 could look a bit silly now on the day. He fell last time, so if he recovers from that fall last time out, he'd be bang there. He'd really good run at Punchestown previously. I saw Patrick Mullins. We sponsored a Racing Post preview. What's the word? You can go find that. It's about 2 hours long. It's really, really detailed. But Patrick Mullins is very, very positive on him as well. So, yeah. 5-1 for me might look a bit big on the day for Faheen. I'm not sure if you've seen him recently, Al. Any thoughts? No thoughts on Faheen, whether he's gone or not? No. Nothing for that.
He's had his day in the sun.
Really, yeah? We're not 5-1?
No.
Arkle Chase as well, another one that Larishberg is out of.
That was a blow now.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure people will be relatively disappointed, but still a very open-looking contest. It looks a bit strange. I think the top of it is a little bit classier. As you go down, you kind of go, it's pretty much just going to be these three involved. You've got Lalor, or Layla, whatever way you say it, top after his run at Exeter. Defi Desai, seeing a bit of support as well. He might well go to the JLT, but again, non-runner, no bet, has you covered there. And Glenn Forrest has seen a lot of support since he basically absolutely obliterated Kalashnikov at Sandown. So I think outside of that, you're pushing hard to find a classy runner. Those three, Paloma Blue, just each way is interesting for me. Needs to improve massively, but he's shown signs of it. I wouldn't put it completely beyond them, to be honest. But again, we'll do more Cheltenham chat next week. Just two non-runners that we should probably note there.
Okay, we'll look forward to it. We'll finish up with GAA then, Bernard. I know you've been hopping and trotting and waiting for your chance on this.
Go on, Bernie.
Quick one. We're not going to go too hard now on the Donegal motion getting defeated. No. But in 30 seconds, can you sum up your thoughts on it? It's Dublin are going to be able to nominate Croke Park and have it as, you know, you're obviously
it was
Croke
a shame.
Park game as well.
The word, I still can't get my head around the result, I have to honestly say. But the wording of it, it's a shame the wording was incorrect.
Did it really come down to the wording?
No. It basically would come down, Alan, that
it's been a bit it's been a bit too sensitive and convenient.
It is, but
now.
Just our way out of it.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of the delegates voted basically for financial reasons over fairness of
your
playing.
Own county board included.
My own included, absolutely. I put them a piece for Saturday. 100%. Delegates don't really care. The genuine clubs don't care what way they represent the counties. There's no accountability. You push a button and a pad.
Not everyone would agree with you there, but go ahead.
Well, I'm telling you, it's the truth. In my honest opinion, I think Congress is a joke. Absolute joke. Only for this Donegal motion, no one would have known it even existed last weekend. That's a fact. It's completely wrong Dublin have two home games. It's completely wrong. It's unfair. It's unjust. At the end of the day, to me, this is a... Croke Park at the top table... hierarchy, whatever you want to call it, they wanted this motion defeated. And they got it defeated. End of story. Because there's no sense in two-thirds of the 64% of delegates voting against themselves. It doesn't make sense. My own county included. To give them an advantage. There is no sense or logic in it. The only logic was financial reasons, which is wrong in my opinion, but that's the way it is. And that's the way things are.
Is there just for the GAA in general, say from a bit of an outsider's perspective, is there any sport in the world that has as much moaning and giving out about rules and stadium changes? And like, so often what we talk on this or even radio shows I'm listening into, it's just constant talk about this stuff that you get so sick of. You're like, talk about the bloody
they
game.
Own
like.
The GAA, and there's democracy apparently from all levels, every county board, every club, they can all push for change. So that's the problem. Everyone thinks they own it, whereas in something like FIFA, some goon at the top says this is what's going to happen, and it's changed. And I think,
but there's still loads of moaning about things like VAR, and there's still loads of moaning about VAR and rule changes and rugby and stuff like that. But it's just it seems to be
the GAA does an awful lot of good.
Constantly,
I'll answer that pretty quickly for you, Dex, just, and it won't delay you, Shane. I think it's an important point to say. I absolutely agree with what you're saying. The problem is that Croke Park, the PR end of it, they're dreadful. If they do something good, they're dreadful at selling that. They're really, and they don't really care. The PR side of it is a disaster. We've seen that last year. The Newbridge situation, the Lee Miller tribute game, all that and everything. Disaster. They do so much good. There is no question or doubt about that throughout the country. A lot of people nearly think it's an extension of the state or the government, whatever, and have a right to bash it the way they do. The good they do far outweighs it. But going back to what your main point is, it's the big problem is the simple things. There is a disconnect. The grassroots people on the ground, the volunteers, the players, club members and all that, there is a disconnect with the very top. There's no doubt. There always has been. It wouldn't take a lot to sort out those five or six or seven things you're talking about, because the thousand things they do brilliantly well throughout the whole country is incredible. And it's just a PR disaster one after the other. That is their handling of the situations that should never escalate to the way they do. But in saying that, and I've knocked them, I give out, but I do genuinely believe the amount of good that's been done in every club and every parish throughout the country is quite incredible. And they've not an awful lot more senior serious situations coming down the track rather than the Donegal motion. I mean, pitches, where people are going to play. This, the whole ladies' situation and camogie and football. Watch 10 years' time and 5 years' time. We won't have pitches to put kids out on. We won't have pitches to put teams out on. It's actually getting that serious.
And they're the rural clubs are going to fall apart.
They're going to
well.
Fall apart. Yeah. And there's so many more issues that they need to get their head around rather than Donegal motion. But to give Dublin a second home match is just lunacy.
Let's look at some of the matches this weekend, because there's a full round in both hurling and football. I think Clare against Limerick is arguably the standout game in the hurling this weekend, because last year Limerick beat everyone, and well, actually they drew with Cork, to be fair, twice, both in Munster and in the All-Ireland semi-final before going to extra time. But Clare are the one team that beat them. Not only did they beat them, they hammered them. Now John Conlon is out this weekend with an ankle injury, but I think this is a game that Limerick will definitely want to win. They're top of Division 1A, and I think they want to ram it home to Clare, their neighbours, that we're better than ye, despite what that Munster game showed last year.
I remember that game. It was, you couldn't believe that was the same Limerick team. And but they did change. There was a lot of things. I mean, it's the first time you say they didn't try. They were gutless, this, that and the other. They were terrible. They were flat.
See, they had guys playing under 21 midweek throughout that as well.
Yeah.
I think last week's game will have helped Limerick hugely. Getting beaten,
losing to Cork at home.
I think the way they battle back, not big crowd at home, but I don't think it'll disappoint the management or players really and truly. I think if you keep going and beating everyone, I think it's a rain check and a moment that was needed, if you like. They'll got a lot from it. John Conlon's announced this week. John Conlon's gone for the rest of the league. That's huge. That's a massive bearing of them up front. I mean, he's their talisman, their go-to man. I think it'll have a huge bearing on the result. I think Limerick will win.
Yeah, as well. Would you believe this? Limerick are the only team in Division 1A with a positive scoring differential.
That's actually incredible.
Yeah, they're plus 16.
That says everything.
Yeah, Wexford minus 1, Kilkenny minus 1, Cork minus 5, Clare minus 7, Tip minus 1. That's
nuts. If you look at, I think there's an edge missing for some of the hurling games, Shane, because there's no real penalty for doing badly as such.
Yeah, that's true. There's no relegation. There's no relegation.
The edge is missing a little bit. I was up to see Cavan fighting last Sunday against Roscommon. They fought for their lives. I know it was Cavan, and they played some brilliant football. But to see, and I recorded a couple of hurling matches, there's a lack of that edge is missing.
I think more so teams are trying to develop their systems and players rather than actually winning it for the sake.
And you can see it, Shane. You can see it in the games. There's no doubt that they're playing like that.
It's taken away from the league this year.
A little bit, but yeah, the championship is going to be unreal.
It's going to be brilliant, please God.
Who's going to win this game? I'm going to go with Limerick as well.
So am I.
Without Conlon.
Touch of odds on 10-11, with 11-10 about Clare.
Again, without Conlon, 10-11 Limerick.
One point in the handicap. Would you have Limerick minus one at 6-5? Kind of kick your price on a little bit. Given that you're saying the points difference there as well, you'd imagine
it's very good.
Yeah. Look, it's to be honest, you wouldn't even be surprised if Clare won this game at home as well. It's so unpredictable, like you say. It's not exactly winner takes all type.
Yeah. I think if you're taking Limerick, you take the minus one on the handicap. It makes
sense. I would 6-5. Yeah. Waterford, have it in there is one of my bets. So stay with it.
Waterford against Galway this weekend. I went and watched Waterford for the first time under Pádraig Fanning at the weekend. They lost by 2 points to Dublin. Had a penalty at the end. I would have said a very harsh penalty, won by Tommy Ryan. He was being marked by Darragh O'Connell, midfielder, who was playing cornerback, because when Dublin are missing a back, they're missing a bit of pace, they're missing a bit of quality back there. So he's putting his midfielder, Matty Kenny's putting his midfielder back, cornerback. So that just shows you that the panel's a little bit shallow. For Pádraig Fanning, he's been part of Wexford's backroom team before under Davy Fitz. he'll know Galway quite well because they'll have been planning for Galway with Wexford the last few years. He'll probably want to win here. He's got the two Bennett brothers looking really, really good. Shane Bennett is back this year. Austin Gleeson at six didn't set the world alight against Danny Sutcliffe, who scored four from play. Galway, their only blip was a draw against Carlow here. They've been coasting along in Division 1B. So
it was a huge win for Matty Kenny. I really thought it was massive. I was listening to Waterford, on the radio. It was up in Cavan. I think they needed it, and it was huge for them. But okay, defensively, shipping those goals.
Four goals.
A lot.
Could have conceded more.
Yeah, but you know they could have easily lost that game. So big win for them. Will Waterford be too disappointed? I don't think so. I mean, you're talking about the top division in this division here. The likes of Galway, Waterford, Dublin, they're trying so many players there. It's a means to an end. It's the championship, that's it.
Looks like Joseph Cooney won't be back for Galway this
year.
He's
going to stay travelling, I've seen that.
Australia.
Yeah.
Kieran Donaghy is in as he's got a role with the Galway Hurlers this year. What do you make of that?
I found this so strange. I mean, listen, Desi Farrell was brought in this week as well, also as
with
a
Dublin
back
Hurlers.
Dublin
yeah.
Hurlers. But Donaghy. You know, I tell you what I find, and I love Kieran Donaghy. I think he's an awful lot to offer. He's with Sky, he's with Air, he's with Off the Ball, and he's married and his kids. How he's going to fit going up to Galway is, you know, time wise, I don't know how he's going to do that. But it's a very interesting one. I'm very, very surprised that the Galway manager bringing in a high profile player like that. I think he could have an awful lot to offer. I don't know what's his role.
You know, when Kieran McGeaney was with the Tipperary Hurlers back in 2014, my brother Paddy was playing with Tip at the time. He found him very, very good. Just one-to-one meetings, getting him to back himself, this kind of stuff. And he found it very good. I actually spoke with Kieran Donaghy last week before this was announced. And I said to him, on the back of Dougie Howlett being named as part of the
setup,
I said to him, what do you make of this guy's coming from different sports into another sport? And he said he thought it was really good. Now, this was just a private conversation. I don't think I'm betraying his confidence by saying this now, but he says he did see an influence because with Kerry down through the years, they would have had different guys in talking to them. So maybe he really does think he can help the Galway.
Not concerned at all. I know Kieran, he's a fantastic guy. This guy is one of the top blokes out there, Kieran Donaghy. Time-wise, I'd hope he's not taking on too much too soon after finishing up. I genuinely mean that, out of concern for him more than anything else. And people have done it with young families, whatever it is. A few years' time, you realise what he's at. But Michael Dempsey going to Kilkenny, I mean, is probably, you won't get a bigger success story than a football guy crossing over. He didn't like Desi the same. I actually think, and I done actually a piece from McCollum for Saturday last night, would you believe, on this. I think what this tells me is there's so many good people out there in counties that are staring county officials and maybe county board people in the face that have so much to offer within their own counties, the resources and wealth and people they have, that they just don't see it. And it just doesn't have to be a high profile player. It can be somebody in business, somebody in a hurling club that could help a county set up. There is an awful lot of people with a lot to offer. And it doesn't have to be a high profile person that you can bring in within your own county. And they're staring them in the face and they never get the call.
What's the price for Waterford Galway?
At the moment, Waterford 11-8, then Galway 8-11 and draw 8-1, 1 point in the handicap again.
I would go Galway to just beat the handicap there. Yeah, I think Galway can win there. But like, it's such an unknown in Division 1B and in hurling in general at the moment.
Yeah, hurling to me, when the edge is taken off, it is not quite the same. I mean that.
What about Mayo Galway? Mayo were absolutely terrible against Dublin and Croke Park at the weekend. It could have been 15, 20 points. Rob Henley made four or five saves as well.
I watched it. They were dreadful. Dublin were very good now.
In third gear.
Yeah, that's the thing. They had the space to...
They looked like they were out to make...
I didn't think Dublin were good.
Did you not?
No, I didn't. I watched the game twice. And I mean that with respect, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah, tell us why.
If I was to mark Dublin, I'd mark them about 5, 6 out of 10 max.
That doesn't say much for Mayo, then.
No, I mean this sincerely. 1-12 they scored, right? They didn't even go into third gear, Shane. I believe they were in second gear. Such was the opposition. I really believed, and I wrote after Tyrone performance, Mayo were poor against Cavan. They were poor against Roscommon in the first. I know it was terrible conditions. Played very well against Tyrone. This level of performance under James Horne shouldn't have been so poor. It should. There's no excuse to be as bad. We slated Galway for being poor against Dublin and Croke Park a few weeks earlier. These were shocking.
But why? What was it about Dublin that leads you to believe they weren't even 5 out of 10?
Their finishing was dreadful. Yeah. It was poor. The goal chances, they missed six sitters.
Yeah. Was their intensity level up to what it normally is?
Not a chance.
I think their team play was there.
It played fairly well in transition, which they always do. But overall, I go through the players for you with Dublin. How many players would you mark above seven?
You probably Costello can't be maybe at your most intense, though, when a team is that bad against you. Well, you can't really kick on. Dublin,
the reason they were so bad is because Dublin blew them out of the water for the first probably 20 minutes.
I'd have to say, in Croke Park, in the last 7 or 8 years, this Mayo team, the one thing you'd stand over is their effort. They might lose, whatever. They threw in the towel, some of them.
Young players tactically, they were terrible. Well, they certainly weren't good enough the other day, some of the young players.
Yeah, and
Mayo,
the older players didn't help them in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. I have to honestly say,
Bernard, a couple of weeks ago, that Mayo are the only ones that could challenge them.
I did, I said it.
I still believe I actually said that. Kerry as well.
I said a full try. In Croke Park, playing well, when they're at the peak of their game, they're the only ones to stay with Dublin. But for when the game finished the other night, and I seen Horne's face when he dragged himself to shake hands reluctantly, Jim Gavin, to see his face, and it was written all over, this wasn't meant to happen. It actually wasn't. It wasn't in the script. Where do you go from that level? The only thing that matters, the only reason Jim Horne came back to Mayo was to win All-Ireland. No other reason. Mm. The only reason Keith Higgins gave up hurling this year and is going again and again, and the likes of Boyle and fellas did that, McLaughlin, Andy Moore, is to win All-Ireland. Nothing else matters. So the level that they were at the other night, they were a sorry, sorry sight. Yeah, I've loved watching Mayo. Massive regard for them. They'll bounce back. But how do you go from where to where the other night to win All-Ireland? I think that gap is colossal.
Do you go back them at 8 to 13
against
at
Galway?
The moment against Galway?
I'm doing the Galway match. I'm down there.
I'll see you there.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Galway are 7 to 4 and in Mayo 8 to 13. I don't think that represents.
I think Mayo are 8 to 13.
Yeah. See, Galway don't have to carve in, lads. Damien Comer is after getting surgery.
Yeah, so he's out for 10, 12 weeks. Yeah. I think it'll be feisty. I think it'll be physical. You'll see a massive reaction from Mayo. I expect Mayo to win, but it's an interesting game because Walsh needs a win. These guys have only 4 points.
He's in year five as well here. I think it's time that he starts.
And he needs to shake themselves regards in a performance, a 70-minute performance. Yeah. They need it as well.
Two points in the handicap, and it's also a game where we'll double odd someone in the first goal scores if they score in the first 20, so a bit of value maybe there if you can find the goal scorer.
I think it's a poignant moment. I think last weekend is a big moment in Mayo football. I really do. It's a crossroads for a number of the players. Andy Moore has been incredible. Why would you start Andy Moore in Croke Park in a league match?
I think there's a very strong reason why. Because you want Brian Reap, who's up beside him, to know he's got a brilliant player beside him who'll probably take more of the Dublin focus, and he might have a chance to go out and have a good game against Dublin.
He's not. There was no chance he was going to last 70 minutes.
No, that's fair enough. But do you see why Brian Reap has a better chance of performing well if he's up there alongside one of the best players?
But why does Andy Moore have to keep doing it single-handedly up front? Take Andy Moore out of it. Why aren't all the others? Look at the work rate. Aidan O'Shea's work rate the other night.
Poor.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean,
if you look beside him wasn't great either.
I mean, Lee Keegan, Boyle. I mean, why would you leave Higgins on Costello for the match? When anyone knows, I would put the likes of Harrison should have been on Costello, in my opinion, good man marker. Leave Higgins, who can impact and drive.
I've been saying this all year. He's 33 years of age. Want him tracking after a young man.
Absolutely.
You want him getting on the ball.
And just one point. His 150th game for the footballers, not alone the hurlers he's played. What an achievement. He's probably played over 200 games at Mayo. It's incredible. Not alone club matches. Mm. I just think he's one of the greats. Genuinely, to see him being left to do that job with little help the other night, I thought was quite sad and wrong.
Kerry and Monaghan then. Can we get the odds for that?
Another game actually, we'll be doubling the odds on your winning first goal scores, and I should chuck in Donegal Armagh to that one. Apologies, not Kerry Monaghan, it's Donegal Armagh and Roscommon Dublin, so it's pretty much the one that we won't be. This one, but 2-5 about Kerry, 15-2 about the draw, and 5-2 about Monaghan with 3 points in the handicap.
Kerry top of the league. Peter Keane couldn't have asked better. Any particular players that are impressing you? There's a lot of guys that are standing out in general, but anyone who's particularly standing out for you?
I mean, you're talking about Sean O'Shea. He's been exceptionally good. I think Stephen O'Brien has been really good over the number of games. Mm. He's one of the players that's been there for years.
Darragh Moynihan.
Darragh Moynihan, excellent. His Gavin dummy the other day was brilliant as well.
Yeah.
Tomás O'Shea, the full back actually, Sherwood has been actually quite good. I think he's a half back,
only
more than a full back. Tommy Walsh played very well the other day before he just came off with a few minutes to go at midfield, out around the middle third. Galway, it wasn't a great game. Anyone that watched the full game.
If Galway are involved, how could it be a good game?
I still I'd hold counsel on how good Kerry actually are. I'd wait and see later on. I'd love to see a lot of these younger players not being flogged. I'm a bit worried about Sean O'Shea, the amount of game time. I watched him in the Sigurdsson and thought he was a little bit tired. He's been playing an awful lot. Some of the younger lads, hold back, give them a little break when the league finishes and keep them fresh. Hard ground comes this Kerry team and a lot of the youth. I think you'll really see them expressing themselves. I'm still, are they up to Dublin's level yet, really and truly? I'm not so sure. Yeah. And when you see the likes of Mayo, maybe Tyrone and Galway, I just honestly think Dublin are standing still. They're not any better, probably not as good as they were a couple of years ago, but the others are regressing a little bit now, in my opinion.
And speaking of them, Monaghan beat Dublin in the opening day, probably the best day.
Where have they gone?
They've lost every game since, and they're bottom of Division 1.
But the confidence levels, but that work rate, the intensity that Monaghan always bring, it's gone. And that's what I can't understand. I'd say Malachy O'Rourke saying, what's happened here? You know, the teamwork.
Just a brilliant win.
Brilliant win, and they really looked like, against Galway, they were shocking. Mm. And last week, not so good. I expect them to go down and a big performance from them. Will they beat Kerry down and Kerry can't see it? Monaghan, I watch Cavan. Monaghan and Cavan have to play each other in 2 weeks' time. I'll tell you, that's the game. You know, Monaghan would be very careful to go to Division 2, which would be a disaster.
It would indeed. Any other games before we wrap up, lads?
Don't forget Mead and Kildare, massive game in Division 2 this weekend on Sunday. Looking forward to going. 10,000, 12,000 in Navan. Big game, whoever
promotion
wins. Good
clash.
Luck.
Yeah.
It will be
sure.
A good local derby, honestly, worth going to.
8-11 Mead.
8-11?
Yeah, 11-8 Kildare, that's 15-2 to draw and 1 point again.
11-8 Kildare. Mm. I hope and praying that we'll win, but I think the bookies have been very generous. Mm. Kildare 11-8 are dangerous. Very dangerous.
Let's get the bets of the week, lads. Declan?
I'm going to go with even money on Harry Kane. That's if he plays, because I did see something suggesting that it was a bit of a headbutt in the Chelsea game that he might get in trouble for, but he should be all right. And also, just race didn't mention, I should throw something in for the weekend. They've got the Greatwood Gold Cup at Newbury, the 240. Happy Diva favourite for this, having won a listed race. Or apologies, second favourite, I should say now, 6-1 in the betting. You got Warsaw on the top, 11-2. Having won a listed race at Huntingdon last time, she's been in good form this year, and she's getting a bit of weight off them. As well, off quite a few at the top of it, so could be in with a good chance. I think 6-1 is good value for Kerry Lee.
An English treble, Shane. I'm going to go for Brighton at home, very good home form this year. United to beat Southampton, and Wolves, who suffered a strange defeat during the week.
I told you, didn't I tell you Huddersfield could get a couple of shock wins before the end of the year, and you dismissed me again?
No, in fairness to that manager as well, I suppose he's trying to put his stamp on things, but they'd lost 13 out of the previous 14 or something, so I think Wolves will get back to winning ways at home to Cardiff. And a League of Ireland double, Dundalk to beat Shamrock Rovers, and St Pat's to beat St Pat's are playing UCD.
Right, okay. I go at Mane anytime scorer 7-2 against Everton. Harry Maguire for first goal, Leicester away to Watford 20-1. I like the sound of that. Man United -1. I can't remember what the odds were, but Man United -1 at Southampton, I think. Probably isn't the worst bet in the world. In fact, it's at Old Trafford as well.
Yeah.
And Limerick 10-11 against Clare as well. I like that. Bernard?
Yeah, I was going to just a double Man United Liverpool. I think is a simple double, roughly even money double there. I think that's money in the bank. I like, there's Mayo, I think -2, 6-5 is a good bet. I'd expect a massive performance and a rebound, the rebound from them. And I just, there's two there. Dundalk, you said it there. Dundalk to come from behind 14-1, just to give an outside shot. That's a big bet and a good one. I like that as well. I think Spurs are 21-20. They'll win.
Brilliant stuff, lads. We've it all said. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, lads.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.